outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey.
So happy Cinco de Mayo, Wayne.
Cinco de Mayo. I'm much more of a May the 4th be with you guy.
I mean, that's the beauty of it. We get both. We get Cinco de Mayo on the 5th, and we get May the 4th be with you as well. And so, and they're just one day apart. Are you doing anything fun to celebrate Cinco de Mayo?
But by the time people hear this, it's going to be like the 16th of May or something.
That's true. That's fair. Yeah, that's
way off of it. No, I'm not doing anything to celebrate Cinco de Mayo today. I don't even know what it is. I know it has something to do with drinking beer, which I don't do. And it has something to do with Mexican Independence Day, but it really doesn't because it's not their Independence Day. So I'm just totally confused about Cinco de Mayo. But it's not in my world. How about you? Are you partying tonight?
No, I'm not partying tonight. Oh, but okay. I just love the fact that we have two really fun days, Cinco de Mayo and May the 4th be with you, that are just right on top of each other.
You obviously work at a college campus.
I definitely work on a college campus. This is correct.
Because in my world, these things don't enter in at all.
Oh, they're very much a part of my world.
I can tell. So have a good time. Sarah and I actually going to go see Jerry Seinfeld tonight.
Nice.
Okay. I guess. I don't know how crude the presentation is. I hear it's pretty family friendly, so we'll find out.
Okay. I feel like Jerry Seinfeld wouldn't be outside of the box. There's some other comedians that are fairly mainstream that I think you would need to prepare to have a regular amount of F-bombs thrown your direction, but I feel like Jerry Seinfeld would be pretty family friendly.
And this is actually, surprisingly, the first stand-up comedy act Sarah and I have ever attended live.
Really?
Yes. Isn't that weird? We've never done this before.
Especially living in Southern California. Yes, that is very weird.
That is very weird. We just have not made it to such things, and Sarah wanted to go, so we're going.
Okay. I was going to ask who initiated this. So this is a Sarah initiated thing. Got it.
Yeah, which surprises me, but we're going to go. So
okay.
Out to dinner, out to a show, get done late tonight, drive. Oh my gosh. It'll be so late getting to bed for Sarah and me anyway.
At least you won't be fighting traffic. That won't be a major issue at that time of night.
No, it won't be. We'll sail on home. Well, I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Kyle Rice.
And welcome to this episode of The God Journey.
So I got stumped with a interesting best thing that I heard this week that I wanted to throw out to you.
Okay.
One of my students asked me in a class this last week, when does love become permanent?
Hmm.
Yeah.
And we're talking about romantic love?
Just love in general. When does love become permanent? When does it become such a space in your world with a person in a relationship that it cannot be removed or it cannot be lost?
When you give birth to it.
Okay. So, okay. So that was a lot of the general consensus was, I mean, a lot of the feedback was, well, I'm not a parent yet. Like, I don't think I know what that means. Basically, the only space where love is permanent is with your biological or adoptive children, with your kids. I don't know. I don't know if I agree with that. I was wrestling with this. This was one of those questions that I've been chewing on for a while that a student just dropped, and I'm still wrestling with, because when I think about permanency, even getting into the conversation about some of the like righteousness stuff versus justice, right? Like if I'm just getting my get out of hell free card, or I'm born to them, so love is permanent. I know a lot of people who love was not permanent with their biological parents, that their parents, their capacity to be able to express love, they may have internally, and I don't know this because I don't know their parents in most of those situations, they may have internally it felt an experience of love, but their external capacity to be able to show love was almost non-existent. And so in their minds, love was not permanent, even with the person who they were born to that was supposed to be the author of unconditional love in their life, the first model of what it means to be loved and cared for. And yet in those spaces, they didn't experience it. And so I don't know if I even buy the biological component, like when I give birth or when they're mine, when my wife has them, you know, kind of a deal. I I don't know. I wrestle with it.
Well, I don't think it's always true in every situation, but I think for the most part, I think most parents, most healthy parents feel a permanent sense of love and affection for their kids.
Yeah.
And grandkids. So that's normal.
Yeah. Now,
does sin cut in on that? Does abuse cut in on that? Does brokenness cut in on that? Absolutely it does. But when you asked the question, my first thought was love is permanent. Doesn't mean our experience with it is. If love is the river that flows from God's heart, then when I'm in that river, my love for, I can think of many relationships I have right now for which I would say, I think that love is real. I think it will exist forever. I don't see it being cut off.
Yeah.
But if they showed up at my house with a gun and blew my brains out, then I would be done right then probably. Or maybe just the second before they pulled the trigger. Or maybe not
quickly.
Or maybe I would just, my love for them would just hurt over their brokenness. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I think love is, our experience with love isn't necessarily. It's in and out, up and down. Yeah. Because we're broken humans.
I like that. Because I think, especially when I think about my relationship with Christ, I mean, that he loved me before I even knew of his existence. And so in that space, my identity in his love was and still is permanent. But like for me, the first response like that I struggled with is that they were talking about romantic love. And like, if you give your vows, like it does it when in the marital relationship, does it become permanent that it cannot be lost? And my feedback was, you always want to be in a process of being curious and cultivating love and continuing to pursue the heart of the person that you are exploring life with and doing life with, that it's in those times that you think that I have achieved it, that love is permanent, that I have shown them that I love them completely. That's when you stop pursuing their heart and the deal is never sealed. And so in my mind, my first reaction is it's not that it isn't permanent, but it constantly needs to be cultivated and grown and cared for and protected. That was like my first internal reaction when I thought about that statement.
You could step back a little bit too and say valued. If I keep valuing that relationship and that person, then I'm ready to go through what conflict, what things would try and intrude on that and let love win over those things. But I do like the idea that love is a continuous reality. And there's at no point which you can just say, it's permanent. I'll kick my feet up on the couch now and just relax through it. Because I think the value of love, it's not that we earn it.
Yeah.
It's the value of love that, particularly for a person that we value, that you want to keep them in that place, keep growing in that reality, keep fighting off the demons that would come to attack it and destroy it.
Absolutely.
And then the permanence is in the enjoyment of it.
Yeah. And I like that a lot.
Yeah.
Very nice. Okay. What about you? Best thing you heard this week?
Yeah. Best thing I heard this week, I can't really talk about yet, which is hard, but I'll give one little offshoot of it. Maybe that'll get away. It's just, I meant to tell you off air first, because it's not ready to go public, not by my choice, but by someone else's choice.
Okay.
In any case, we were talking about, and maybe it fits around this, you know, being deserving of something like God gives or God does in our life. And I've had things happen in my life where people would say to me, man, you really deserve that for all that you've done. And there's a part of me that just cringes inside, like, no, I don't deserve anything. Everything's a gift. Everything is whatever. And that's because I'm always thinking of deserving as merit. And this, in a conversation, someone said this, deserving from God is not about merit, it's about value. I just that is so cool to think that I don't deserve things from God because I merit them. I deserve them because he reckons me deserving because of the value he places on me to share the gift.
I really like, I mean, when you think about passages in scripture where like talking about how he is the giver of good and perfect gifts, or that talking about the lilies of the field, and yet even more so as his beloved, as his creation, how is he going to care for us? Like, I mean, because I think part of it comes from that space of identity, right? Like that I think about my daughters. sometimes I give them gifts or I give them things that they quote unquote may not necessarily deserve, or however you want to put that. But it's because I love them, because I value them. I just like seeing the delight in their eyes when they experience something and I get to experience it with them. And that to me is joy. And so me, as a very imperfect father, I can't fathom what that looks like for my perfect father in heaven that is walking alongside of me in that and wanting to engage with me in that. I love that idea, because I would agree with you. Deserving often, there's two directions that it goes, either merit, so performance, or entitlement. Like the, I deserve bubble. And just the other side of the yuck factor that makes my stomach turn.
Or sacrifice. I gave something over there, so God does this thing.
Yeah.
I love the whole idea of value as it relates to God. I have value, therefore he cares for me. He gives gifts and whatever. It's not about deserving it. And if we could switch our thoughts about God from deserving it into just the value that God places on us and the value we can place on others, that giving our love is not to do with they merit it. They've earned it in some way, but the just the value of a person and being free enough to share that kind of love with them. So I've been chewing on that this week. It's been awesome.
I like that. I think about even the focus, I don't even know quite how I want to put language around this, but like the focus, or I've heard of the object of affection and delight. It's because I am his affection, or I am his delight. It's because of his affection towards me or for me that I get to experience some of those gifts versus that, well, I've done X, Y, and Z, and I've kept the 10 commandments, and I've here, whatever checklist of performance values that we want to throw out there to him.
But, for sure. Love that.
Okay. So I wanted to circle back a little bit here, and I want to unpack a little bit more for you
you do.
I have been mulling over our conversation about your visions and what you've been experiencing. And I want to unpack it a little bit more with you, because I have experienced things with Father that I think would fall in the line of being able to see into the spiritual realm, or encounters with his spirit that have been very meaningful, very powerful. They've been very fleeting. They don't happen very often. They come pretty quickly. They've been in seasons of life, often in seasons of like more turmoil and chaos, where he's really stepped in and intervened, or shared an expression of love where he's pulled back the veil. And it's been just such a delight to my heart. But I was just curious, like, I wanted to unpack a little bit more what it's been like for you going through this, because this has been a multi-year experience for you, and it sounds like it's been continuing to build and be more consistent. So, like, how would you describe, like, when you're in it, is there any residue afterwards? Like, what is it like to have more of a consistency of this type of experience with Father?
Yeah, it comes and goes. So it's not like a regular routine that I get used to.
Okay.
So when it starts to happen, when I start seeing stuff that I don't normally see when I close my eyes, it now there's an excitement in my heart about, well, what is this? Where are we going? And sometimes they're very short. Sometimes it's just, it invites me into a connection and a conversation of prayer to God that just is wonderful and short lasting and goes. The longer ones, the ones that have lasted like upwards of half an hour to an hour. When they're unfolding, they're not, I mean, the things I see are awe inspiring. They are, they take my breath away. That happens.
Okay. But
I don't feel like when it's happening, like this is some really grandiose something or other. It just feels natural. It just feels like, okay, God brought me here and he's doing something here. And I'm always questioning it. I'm always questioning, okay, is this real? Is it not real? But then it just is so, it'd be impossible to replicate this by my own ingenuity or even imagination, because it's not that. It's not what I think I'm seeing, I actually see stuff. So it's not awesome in the sense that I'm really aware that, wow, this is an ecstatic moment with God that's shaking me to my core.
Yeah.
But in the middle of it, I feel incredibly loved. I feel incredibly at rest. It feels very playful. I was talking with someone about today. It feels like God's being very playful with me because it just seems like if you want me to see something, don't take 2 years to unfurl it. Just show it to me. Just like the eyeball picture that I got in the podiatrist's office. Just give me this. And now I don't have that angst anymore. It just, okay, there it is. I'm hold that before him. I don't know where that goes. I have noticed I was really reluctant to share this on the podcast because I much prefer to be in a conversation. So you're kind of gauging if the person's understanding, whatever, and just putting it out there with you and I talking about it. I'm going, oh my gosh, I hope this doesn't backfire in some way I can't see. But the email I've gotten and the conversations I've been in with people have been really refreshing. It's been, thank you for sharing. I just, as you were talking, hope just rose in my heart and real hope in what God is doing in the future. And so I get that feedback, which has been very positive. I get the feedback that I understand when people say, why doesn't God do anything like this for me? And I would like that to happen. And I feel bad for that, but I understand it because when Lewis comes over here and shares with me these dreams and conversations he has with Jesus, I'm like going, man, I would love some of that. I don't know how to get that. I'd love some of that. Just to have a conversation with Jesus that you could talk about the next day. He said these things. And when Lewis says the things he gets from Jesus, I know they're things he doesn't know until Jesus reveals it. And I know from the vast majority of people, that happens more internally where they discover stuff or a phrase runs through their head and that, you know, Jesus kind of lets them in on stuff. It's much more natural than having a dream where you're sitting on a park bench with Jesus. I know one other person that does that besides Lewis. And I think it's fabulous. And I've found myself at prayers of extremity at times like, Jesus, just give me a dream where you sit on the park bench and I can watch your lips. And then I realize I'm involved in something right now that, you know, it began in my 70s, probably right at 69 or 70. I have to go back and look at the exact date because I'm journaling it all. Yeah. I don't know what to do with it, but I just feel like this is something that God's doing, and I wouldn't encourage other people to seek it, to whatever. Just if you get too focused on how you want God to talk to you, you're going to get lost. And I think the better posture is just the love, rest, and play. Just stay with him before him. If God's got something like that to invite you into, he will do it.
And
it may be in your 70s. So if you're in your 30s, just relax for Pete's sake.
But do you think, so depending on what community of faith you're growing up in, living life in, et cetera, do you think that they, like people from different communities may have different answers to this? So I'm intrigued to see what you're going to say on this.
Okay.
Do you think that what you're experiencing through like these types of vision experiences and those encounters or Lewis's dreams, do you think that that is God's more desired norm and there's just enough obstacles, busyness, et cetera, barriers that are preventing that from being the norm? Or do you think that those are more outlier experiences and God tends to lean more into like the consistent, still small voice nudges? What do you think on that?
Well, just by observation, I would say the nudges, the thoughts, that's how God mostly works, or at least how most of us and how most of my life has been. And most of my relationship with Jesus still is. Most of it is inside that space. This other vision thing, I can go months between something happening there. And I'm not waiting for it. I'm not looking for the next one. I expect it to stop at any moment, even though the one thing that keeps me thinking about it, it doesn't seem done yet. I heard from one of the guy who said he's had a 20-year, at one point in his life, had a 20-year vision that
kept unfolding.
Yeah, it just kept unfolding over 20 years. And I'm like, okay, maybe we do that. I love leaving this stuff in his hands. Part of me says, yes, if we learn to live loved and learn to be at love, rest, and play, we might more easily see the unique ways God wants to make himself known for us.
Okay.
So I would say, yeah, I think that's true. But what I would hate to spur in people is, okay, man, I'm going to go get that. Because then it's going to be about earning it. And it's just going to take you down roads that are not going to be helpful.
So how do you manage the desire, though? So, because this is something that I've wrestled with personally, is I've had and still have from time to time very beautiful, intimate, powerful, mind-blowing experiences with Father. And so that's still a part of my world. I've had some incredible ones in my past. But how do you manage the desire in the interim? Because it's those moments, it's those thin spaces that it's like, man, I cannot wait until I get to just constantly dwell in a thin space. And there's just this desire, this longing. I think I told you even made this comment the other day on our podcast about how, like, I can't wait when I see Jesus in heaven, like when I am walking to the gates, that my hope is that his response is, oh, it's so good to see you, my dear friend. Like, that's what I hope his response is like, we get to hang out now without a mirror that is fogged and without any veils that are in between us. Like, my dear friend, we get to now just spend unbridled time together, uninterrupted time together. And that, I don't know. How do you deal with the...
I don't think my desire is that strong for what's happening.
And I would say that that's because you have had regular, over the last several years, you've had regular communion, intimate communion with God, where you've recognized his nudges, you've seen things that he's been doing, you have a lot of relational context with Jesus on a regular basis. And I'm wanting to be a voice for the people that don't have that consistently. What would you say to them?
Well, I think at younger ages, we do have this desire for more connection with God and don't know how to get it. And we try things that don't work. And, you know, that's all been very frustrating to me in my younger days. Or you have a moment and then you want that moment back again. And I guess I've been at this so long that when this started to happen, first of all, I did hope it was a corporate experience. I was praying with 10 other people, and I was hoping that when I opened my eyes and said, "Dad, you guys seeing what I'm seeing?" they would have all said yes. And I thought, oh, that'd been great. Yeah. It hasn't been that. And I'm sure they would have all loved it.
Yeah.
To have it happen. For me, it's been my relationship with Jesus and my connection to him is such that I don't need this vision. This vision is not the thing that it plays out. It, like I said, most of my relationship with Jesus is outside of that. When that happens, I feel like it has been my experience in life. When God confirms something in some really spectacular way, it's going to be because what it's going to require of you is going to be intensely painful. And he wants you to know he's invited you into it. So that's been my experience way back to whenever God confirms something in my life by some extraordinarily supernatural means, it has cost me something. Maybe not right away.
Yeah.
Maybe months or years down the road. But it has helped me be able to say, okay, well, I didn't choose this. God directed me here. So that brings peace to my heart. In these moments, like I had, this is what's been weird. Having shared it on the podcast and having interacted with people about it, now the vision thing has just gone nuts in my heart. I had two experiences over the last 2 days.
Okay.
Absolutely advanced this story down the road and saw some things. And inside when that's happening to me now, there's things that, and there's people I hold before God whose work needs to unfold in their heart in a greater way. I actually hold people there and I talk to them about it. And I have prayers for them that I wouldn't have prayed if I'd not been in that moment. So it's different that way. Yesterday I was seeing some of the same colors and things and the movement and the blob, the dark blobs and the treasure winning out, the fire of God burning through the darkness. And I just thrilled about that. And all of a sudden everything stopped. And I saw a flat wall with this orange and purple and yellow, like wallpaper on it, though. It wasn't wallpaper. It was flat. There'd been so much movement, and all of a sudden there was no movement at all. I was just looking like a huge wall with this very beautiful wallpaper, a geometric design and these colors just, and it's very intricate design. It's very, very, very small. So it's repeated over and over again. And I'm looking at it going, what just happened? How did I get from here to here? And then something started to happen in the middle. And so there's this flat wall. And what looks like the treasure is like trying to emerge from inside this wall, which I think the wall really got my attention when something moved in the middle.
Okay.
And so there's this spherical, though it's not well-defined edges, it's just spherical kind of light with stuff over the top of it. I couldn't see the light clearly because there was movement. There was stuff on top of that. And I've seen this before in very distant ways. And I'm kind of, I don't know what that is. That's something. Yeah. What is that? Now it was really clear what was happening on top of, above the light, what was coming out of the light were letters and symbols and words of things. Although I could not read the language. It was telling maybe some English looking letters, but then they weren't. And there was some like hieroglyphic things, but then they weren't. And they're very broad, very black, broad strokes of like a bold pen. And I mean, really like a calligraphy thing, almost using the wide edge. And I'm just watching this so fast, just boom, just unfolding and falling. Like it's boiling up out of the middle, these symbols and things, and then fall back down the sides and new stuff would emerge. And I'm looking at it going, what is this? I feel like I should read it, but I can't read it. And I'm asking God, what can I read here? And then the phrase in my head is the living word. Hmm. The living word, that this is somehow the way God communicates inside himself. Now, I could be absolutely drunk on this point, although I wasn't drinking.
You never drink it.
But no, I don't. But I'm looking at it going, what is this? What? But I feel like I should read it. Like there's a story here or there's something God wants me to know, but I can't read the language. I can't see it. And it's happening so fast. I don't have time to interpret it, but I feel like God wants me to read it. And so I'm asking him to teach me to read it. And I have the sense that what was so incredible about this is that this whole thing was unfolding on top, outside or coming from within the treasury thing. And how do I say this? It was like there's a whole story unfolding here that you wouldn't have to read down the page or flip pages. You just look at this one spot and everything would come to you that you need to know.
Hmm.
And I thought, wouldn't this be a great app? I could do an app where the next book I write just kind of appears before you and notes how much your eyes are moving and so it's going at the rate that you could. And the other thing I felt was this thing is so, there's so much content here.
Yeah.
That our English language, and I'm a writer and I like our English language, but it's so pathetically weak to convey the realities of God. Trying to put God on a piece of paper and describe it to somebody. What I've done my whole life in that moment seemed ridiculously futile.
Oof.
Why would I ever try to do that? The life of God is so much greater. And for even, that's why you have to have a living word. It can't just be the words, a Bible God gives you, because those words are inadequate to convey a reality. And I love the Bible. It's God's truth. There's lots of truth in there for us to know him and know how he thinks, but it's so incredibly incomplete, which I think is why Jesus didn't say he would leave us a Bible to guide us into all truth, but I would leave you with my spirit.
The living word. Yeah.
And so the living presence, but it's readable, discernible. There's some way. And at the end of it, I just said, Jesus, teach me to read. If you want me to understand, and then I don't know what would happen if I could actually read things directly from God's heart, I would freak out. I don't even know. That's what I thought about when it was over. I thought, that's weird. I don't know what I would do with it. And here's what's really weird. I felt like as I was in the backyard, just having this time with Jesus. I felt like I'd been there over an hour. I just got done and I got, oh my gosh, there's things I got to do.
Yeah.
And I got up, and as I moved for the house, I looked at my watch. I'd been there 12 minutes.
Oh my gosh. So this is like a Chronicles of Narnia type timeline experience.
I've never noticed that before. The time I spent in it felt very much like the time when I was the time moving in
traditional this linear time. Yep.
Yes.
Yeah.
This one was not, and it disoriented me. I went, okay, what just happened? Because, you know, sometimes like you have a dream, you fall asleep, you have like this 3-hour dream, but you wake up, it's only been 20 minutes later.
Yeah.
How did all that happen? It was like that. And I was incredibly disoriented. I was like, okay, I have spent more time. It's just 12 minutes is not much. But it stopped. I didn't stop it.
Yeah.
It just was done. And I was done. But that was really disorienting. How could that be only 12 minutes when I was pretty sure it was an hour or more? And I was behind on something I needed to get done. And then I suddenly wasn't. And then I had all this extra time to try and write it down. That's what I did. I tried to write down the things I saw. And I'm really intrigued by this whole living word thing. What is this going to be? If anything, and I would be disappointed if that's where it all ends, never go down this road again. That would be kind of like, okay, I almost got to something, but didn't quite get there. But man, it was so, when I realized it was symbols and letters and it was words, even though I couldn't read them, man, my heart leapt. I just went, wow, what is this? How is this? Is this some way that God wants me to read, discern, understand something about him? I don't know. I don't know which of those things it is, but it's
crazy. So then what do you do with that? Like, do you just hold that? Do you process it? Do you reflect on it in journaling? Like, what do you do with it when you have that type of experience? What do you do with it afterwards?
Yeah, I record it.
Okay.
I tell it to a few folks, tell it to Sarah, tell it to a few other folks I connect with, and then wait. I don't feel like, because nothing has been true of this thing, is that I need to figure out what it is. It's that it will come clear at some point, which is strangely the way Sarah's trauma memories have worked. She sees like through a shadow of things. And then over weeks, the shadow, we haven't had this in quite a while. Sarah seems to pass the memories, but they would clarify this person, that person, this date, this is where I was, the location, all that. When in the beginning, it's just shadows and suggestions of things. And now this is work on the other side of something really positive, where it's a shadow, it's a reflection, but I don't see it yet.
Yeah.
And I don't have the hope that by noodling on it, I'm going to figure it out. That's what it was. It was beautiful. I come away from that moment, a little disoriented with the time warp thing that seemed to have happened then. But I come away extremely comforted, extremely at rest in God's ability to do. The one man who wrote me, or I put on the blog comment maybe about hope, I come away with my hope just really exploded inside of who God is. I'm so hopeful, not for me, but for the world, for all that God still wants to do in our world, for all the ways he works that we don't see. And because most of what we do see that we try to say is God's working makes my yuck meter ping, 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 ping. But what I see in the unseen, the conversations I have, the work that God's doing in people who touch my life, intersect in various ways with them, I'm so excited. The city thinking, I've gone back to the city thing with the community in which everything could be known. You don't have to protect yourself. People are not out to hurt you, not out to get you. Yeah. You're not prey. You're just people. And I have relationships like that. Can you imagine if the whole world was like that? That would be crazy nuts. So that's where it is. I have no, like today I didn't, I got to get out there and see what more God wants to do. I feel drawn to those moments. There's a drawing that happens before. So I don't have to worry. Other times when I've tried early on, I've tried to go to a place where it's happened before and just kind of close my eyes and kind of hope to see something. And
yeah,
that was fruitless enough so often. It doesn't even tempt me. I don't. Yeah. When I feel drawn, I'm going to go.
Yeah.
And see what God's about. Isn't that nuts?
That is wild. Yeah. I like that you bring up like the idea of trying to recreate it. Cause I know like before I definitely, like I can think of some times where God really met me like in journaling and stuff. And I would have these like very specific spots that, or events that those things occurred. And so I would go back to those places and it's like, no, that place was meaningful because my spirit went with you and allured you to that place for that time and in that conversation. But to try to go back or recreate it or try to, I mean, I've never been able to have the same experience again. And I use air quotes around that by going back and trying to force a replication of that type of experience. So,
and that's how relationships work, right? Not just ours to God, human relationships. You have this great conversation as a couple that just kind of came up out of nowhere. And then you try to replicate that. We'll have one night a week for quality conversations. And then it's all artificial and it's all awkward. And being free to be in the moment and watch what God seems to unfold and where he's inviting us. And, you know, it is through a glass darkly, the whole thing. I come away from this vision thing going, this is the epitome of that. I see stuff inside these colors and it's not clear to me. And then when it does become clear, I don't often know what to do with it for a while. Yeah. And I hesitated to share the thing from yesterday, this living words thing, because I don't know where that's going to resolve. I haven't had any time to hold that very long in my heart to see what happens there. I'm content just to let God, as he has invited me into this space for whatever reason, that there's a purpose in it, and I'll continue to just kind of sort out what that is. And I wonder how much John's vision on Patmos was like this, you know?
Yes.
How long did that unfold? And his seems very, very clear. And when I get down the road, things seem clearer than they do in the moment. I don't know if there's any similarity, but it's got me thinking, wow, I wonder how that happened. I wonder if there's anything like what I'm having. But knowing God, probably not at all the same.
No.
Because John needed a different experience. And I don't, that's weird to say needed the experience, because I needed it to convey to the rest of us some things that are true about God. But not, like, I don't need this experience for my love for Jesus, my walk with him, my conversations with other people. It has added some real spice of life to what's happening, but it's not needed. It's just wonderful when it starts to happen, the sense of expectancy when when I start to see the things that I see that invites me into this thing, when it starts, I'm just going, oh my gosh, where are we going here?
So I was going to ask you that. What is he expanding in you? And when you think about your relationship with him, how you know his love, how you know his personality, his heart, like what is being expanded by these experiences? Can you put language around that? Or is there anything like a specific area that you feel like is growing or expanding in your understanding of who he is and his love for you?
I would say this, what I've known to be true for me and God's care and love and ability to move my heart is expanding to include the whole world.
Mm.
That's a big part of what's happening. That there's
some
overtones here of how God is engaging this world and how he wants to bring the redemption story to its conclusion, whether that's soon or a long time in the future. But the immense confidence that God is at work and that things are happening beyond us and that he's going to accomplish all that he set out in his heart to do. And we are not the linchpin in that. We're not the, you know, his hands extended. If we can't, God won't, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Because in part of it, a couple of weeks ago, when I could see this treasure and these blobs of darkness try and get it, and the light would always win over the darkness. No matter what the darkness tried to do, the light would come through it and eliminate it. And I just, And I was, as I was praying about this this last time, I'm very aware because Sarah and I are also reading in the Psalms and in Isaiah about God as this consuming fire that's going to get the wicked and the oppressors. And I find myself praying for Sarah in that, and not as an oppressor, obviously, as one who's been oppressed.
Yeah.
And abused. And when I'm praying for her in that same thing, and I'm praying that the delight of God would overrun Sarah's heart. That's words I put to it most recently. And when I was praying that, and then I'm thinking about all the things that the Bible's really hard on, Isaiah and Psalms and all that, about the arrogant and the wealthy who treat their neighbors with disdain, who take from others, the liars who like to lie about people because it gains power or it hides their hurt or whatever. And I'm usually in those, okay, those people need to be burned up. And then my thought is, what if they need to be overrun by joy too? What if their oppressive nature, what if they're harming others? What if that, and most likely is coming from a place of brokenness in the heart, that's going to take brain science. But at the same time, maybe their answer isn't the burning fire of punishment and anguish. Maybe it's the fire of God's delight that liberates a soul from the bondage. But I don't know. Sarah and I have talked a lot about how does justice play out there? I don't know. How, if you've been one of these people, these billionaire types who make all kinds of money and treat others with disdain, even pay your own people around you a pittance compared to what you take out of the till, and do it without, I mean, I don't know how you could do it. I can't do it without a conscience issue that would say, what, everything I have is a gift. Why do I get to be special and own this 50 room mansion somewhere? And, you know, paying people to clean it for me, a pittance. I don't get it. And how God does all that, I don't know, but I found myself praying that delight would overrun the oppressors too. The people whose arrogance, whose dishonesty has wounded me at times in my life. And I don't know how all that sorts out yet.
Yeah.
But if Sarah's the world, and I feel like I live with someone who represents what God feels for the world, not just the Christians in the world, but the world.
Yeah.
And how that plays out, how that expands my heart, that expands it to ridiculous places because I don't know what to do with that. I'm just, okay, I'll let it unfold. What has unfolded in the first 2-3 years of this, it's been amazing. So, and there's lots more I don't understand, but I can trust that when its time comes, it will unfold too.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.